to all the West. Yippee-ki-yay, we make the ground shake. All game day, 12 men. Yay, serenity is vital. The Seahawks coming to take division titles. We are Coach Carol.
Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast, your Seattle Seahawks podcast by 12s, for 12s. I'm Brandon Schultz, member of the Military Seahawkers, and across the table from me, as always, my good friend Adam Emmert.
Brandon, I'm here. I'm powering through this. I'm not going to lie, I'm dogging today. I'm dogging.
You know, I think it's been a bit of a tough week at work and at home for both of us, but you know, nothing like a podcast to just fire you up
to
talk Seahawks football.
I'm so fired up. to quote Pete Carroll there. But this will be good. This will be good. We needed to get out there. You know, with the bye week, you'd think you'd feel a little bit rested, but not so much. There's no rest for the weary, no time to sleep.
Yeah, you know, it's not like a player getting a week off from work. It's, you know, for us, we still have our normal weekly activities. So it was not a bye week for us. It was a bye week for the Seahawks.
So. It was a bye week for the Seahawks, which is turning out to be pretty advantageous when it's all said and done.
It's a good thing. It's... You know, this last week with football, with college football, you know, I got to throw a shout out to my Sooners for, you know, beating Alabama.
Figured you would.
Yeah, I had to get it out there, get it out there right away, you know, because I went into that game thinking, well, as long as I've been a fan of the Sooners, they haven't had a significant bowl victory. I think I started watching and following the year that they got beat by Boise State, which
gotcha. Yeah. That was a rad game.
That was I wasn't even mad after that.
You can't be mad because it was epic.
It was an epic game.
There was a Statue of Liberty play somewhere in there
at the end.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and then somebody proposed on the sideline and
it was an epic.
It was
game.
A Disney movie.
But this was even better because it was Alabama and
you beat the evil Nick Saban.
Beat the evil Nick Saban.
Well, good. Well, that's all. The nod we need to give to college football, because that's about as much as I care about college football.
Yeah, no, I'm good after that.
Because you said significant bowl victory, and I was like, with the 96 bowls, I don't know how many significant bowls that there are.
Last night's game was pretty awesome, too.
Who won? I honestly don't even know.
Oh, Florida State won.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Okay. Oh, very good.
They were down by 18 in the first in the first half.
Who'd they play? Auburn?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And it was back and forth in the fourth quarter. It was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I turned it off when it was 21-3, but then I turned it back on in the fourth quarter, and each team must have scored 2-3 times. There was a 100-yard kickoff return.
So Auburn fans are feeling a lot like Kansas City Chiefs fans right now, where they get up big and then cough it up late.
Yeah, I would imagine so, because Auburn, just look at the season that they had, where, you know, everything was going right for them. It looked like it was their year, and then here they are in the championship game, and obviously things were looking like it was
Much like the Chiefs, you know, start out 9-0, they're having a great year, doing all that, end up in the playoffs as a wild card, unfortunately for them. Showdown with Andrew Luck.
Yeah, that was...
And Andrew Luck adds another stat, a fourth quarter comeback.
That was a wild... How do the Chiefs blow...
I don't know how you gack a 28-point lead with you know, 10 minutes and change left in the third quarter.
Yeah, and no weather or anything. It's all in a dome. I mean, how huge was it that Jamaal Charles went out? Because if you're not just handing the ball off to your running back through the entire second half just to start burning clock once you're up four touchdowns.
I don't even know how that happened, but there's Andy Reid for you right there, and his, you know, clock management and all that, that seemed to rear its ugly head again. My dad, the big Kansas City Chiefs fan, he got out of the shower. He couldn't even stand to watch the last bit of the game. He went and took a shower after we got back from grinding wheels. And he comes out of the shower, and I thought for sure I was going to have to break the news to him what happened, and he must have checked it on his phone before he came out of the bedroom. He's like,
he knew.
Yep, they lost, whatever, let's go to dinner. It was my mom's birthday, so he had to buck up.
He fought through it. That was good. Yeah, I don't know. Can you be really all that mad, though, after having, a two-win season?
That's exactly what he said.
Okay.
See, but that's a very different expectation than the Seahawks this year, right?
Oh, it's a very different expectation. I mean, after going to the playoffs last year and having, you know, the great team that they did and, you know, so close to winning in Atlanta and being in the NFC Championship, and so to have the expectations are the Super Bowl this year. And so if that doesn't happen, it's going to be a disappointing season if that doesn't happen.
Right. So that's definitely something I want to dive into more is, you know, how you'd feel if the Seahawks, you know, if the stars aligned and everything wrong that could happen did happen, and the Seahawks lose that game, how you would feel. And
then I don't want to talk about that.
Because we have to? Well, here's the thing, Brandon. I'm kind of one of those worst case scenario guys. Like, okay. what I need to do is actually, you know, envision, you know, take in the worst case scenario, and that lowers the bar,
okay,
like down to a certain level. So anything that happens above that, I feel
awesome.
Great about. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah,
mental preparation. It's different than how a player would approach it. You know, they have the visualization of success. Adam takes a slightly different approach, mm-hmm, because you're a fan. You can take a different approach.
Absolutely.
You don't have to take the same
approach.
Absolutely.
I pre-fail myself, like, you know, and then that way, if there's any kind of success,
yeah,
I feel good. It's all about managing expectations.
Oh, good. Well, we'll get into that. Also, I'm really excited about this. We have a former Seattle Seahawk in the interview today.
He was excellent.
Craig Terrell, he's going to be on the show a little bit later. Obviously played on the 2005 Super Bowl team.
Defensive tackle,
yeah.
Hoss of a man.
And has a band
now
and
so
still hangs around Seattle.
Can I just say, like, right now that I'm a little jealous of Craig Terrell, that not only was he, you know, an elite-level athlete and played in the NFL as a football player, but then he, you know, he just has a side talent of being, you know,
a musician.
Yeah, a musician, starting a band, you know, no big deal.
Yeah, like,
just,
what are all the good...
Just do it for a hobby, you know, I'm kind of awesome, whatever.
Yeah, what's next? Is he going to, you know, throw on a pair of cross-country skis and try and, you know, go into the
Olympics?
Win the
biathlon or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, probably. Probably could, too.
Right, I know. One of those guys.
Wicked talented.
So Craig Terrell's going to be on the show. Obviously, we're going to talk about the Saints. They're coming up. And I have one play that I know the Seahawks, they
really
have to put up against the Saints this
week. Have you emailed Darrell Bevell yet?
I need to.
He probably didn't get it, though, because he's been interviewing for head coaching jobs.
Oh. And I know Adam wants to talk about this head coaching stuff because...
Yeah, with our coordinators interviewing for head coaching positions throughout the NFL.
And, you know, that's one of the things that there's been a little bit of a fan uproar just about the whole idea of, you know, coaches in these... Obviously, the coaches that other teams are going to be wanting are the ones that are going to be in the playoffs, because there's a reason why they're success. Those teams are having success are because they have good coordinators. I'm all for NFL coaches interviewing the 49ers coordinators all they want.
Greg Roman is not a good coach.
That's okay, but take the pressure off our guys. You know, our guys are bums anyway.
Yeah, they're terrible. Nobody wants them.
Yeah,
exactly. Montana's ugly. Don't move here. It's that same mentality.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that, and then of course we have to talk some more Percy Harvin, because he is practicing, and.
Oh, yeah, he was held out. It was all a plan. It was an elaborate plan, a hoax, just to keep everybody off balance. And now here comes Percy Harvin
Pete
back.
Carroll's evil plan. Now it's launching.
It is, exactly. Activate Harvin plan.
So
that's what's happening.
All right, well, let's get into it. Let's talk a little bit about the Saints game and the fact that, the New Orleans Saints, road warriors, they go on the road. And
yeah, they win one.
They win one against a now sub-500 at-home team and the Philadelphia Eagles. They finish the season 4-5 at home.
They are road warriors. They might as well be called road ninjas.
Yeah, I mean, 1-5 over the course of their entire...
Stout.
Yeah, that's pretty solid.
Yeah.
New Orleans Saints, 1-5.
No. So, I think the biggest problem with this game for me, and especially a lot of other fans, is you look at this and you say, well, we just played back on December 2nd.
Right.
I've seen this story, right?
Yeah, it's part two.
More or less the same players, same venue, same deal. I mean, it's just the playoffs. And it's hard to keep yourself from being trapped by that mindset and to look at this as a fresh game with fresh players, with fresh game plans, with, you know, Lady Luck doing whatever she does on any particular day.
Sure.
It's a different day. It's a different game. You can't rely on what happened in that first game.
Well, and that's one of the interesting things, listening to Coach Carroll and his mindset and trying to drill that into players' heads, that this is a clean slate now. They learned some things in our last matchup. We learned some things, and now we have to go out there and do it all again. Obviously, it's not soccer. You can't carry over the points from a previous game.
Reason number 482, I can't get into soccer.
Yeah. I know we have some overseas listeners. They'll probably be offended by that. But,
I'm sure. Yeah, that's not the only offensive thing I've said. So that just add it in there.
So, you know, One of the things that's interesting about this second game is that this will be the first time this season that the Saints have faced a quarterback that they lost to earlier in the season.
Interesting.
You know, they've lost to Tom Brady, Geno Smith, Russell Wilson, Kellen Clemens, Cam Newton. You know, Cam Newton, they actually they beat him they beat Carolina the first time they played and then lost the second. So
right.
This will be the first time they get a second look, and you have to wonder, you know, Rob Ryan's done a good turnaround on this Saints defense. Can he do that same turnaround, having that game film of Russell Wilson and knowing how they matched up against him just a month ago and giving another go at it?
Sure. You know, one of my favorite phrases is by Colin Cowherd from ESPN Radio, and he says, "Once is a coincidence, twice is a trend, three times is a you problem." Now, this is how I feel about Rob Ryan and that defense going up against Russell Wilson. We've seen Rob Ryan's defense against Russell Wilson his first year when he was with Dallas, or when Rob Ryan was with Dallas and Russell Wilson's first year,
yeah.
And they met in CenturyLink. And Russell Wilson destroyed him. He picked him apart. There's once. Then we see Russell Wilson versus a Rob Ryan defense in year two, back on December 2nd. And he tore him apart even more. That's a trend. That's two. I really think
this
that
is going to be a you
the
problem.
Third time, it's going to be a Rob Ryan problem. So, yeah, at this point, I've seen enough of a track record there to think that we've seen what Russell Wilson does against Rob Ryan.
Well, it was one of the things that was interesting to me is looking at that last game, and they only blitzed Russell Wilson 9 times out of the 35 dropbacks, because Russell Wilson is a good quarterback at picking up the blitz.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe didn't see it quite as much against the Cardinals, but he had a perfect quarterback rating, 158.3 against the blitzes that Rob Ryan's defense sent at him. So, I mean, if you can do that against the blitz, obviously you're not going to blitz a guy. And then, you know, Nick Foles is another one of those guys too, and you saw it in the Philadelphia game. They only went after him 4 times, and Foles wasn't all that great on those 4 instances, but he took care of the ball well enough, and you know, he had plenty of opportunities to go down the field, but I think that was more Nick Foles throwing behind guys, throwing short of guys, and so they didn't have that yards after the catch like the Seahawks were able to pick up against New Orleans. So go back to that New Orleans game. Russell Wilson, his 310 yards came on just 7 completions, so they were completing the ball deep and getting a lot of yards after the catch. You know, if they can go down the field, pick up those yards in big chunks, there's going to be no stopping the Seahawks offense. I think I read a statistic where the Saints are, if they let the opposing offense score 21 points or more, they've won one game.
Really?
Yeah.
See, here's the thing. Before you just said that little stat right there, what I was thinking in my head is you're talking about the Seahawks offense and how they could be relatively unstoppable in this game. And I thought to myself, we're going to score at least 20 points in this game.
Mm-hmm.
If I tell you we're going to score 20 points, do you think there's any possible way we lose that game against any team?
No.
Any offense?
With this defense, I mean, the way they've been playing over these last few weeks, there's been no stopping this defense, and it seems like Carroll has that mentality that he wants these guys to have it in their mind to be the best or one of the best defenses of all time.
Yeah. We're not settling for just like one of the best this year, one of the best Seahawks defense.
Right.
You know, one of the best.
You want to compare them to 2000 Ravens, you know, 2002,
Tampa Bay Bucks.
Tampa Bay Bucks.
Right.
You know, those types.
Steel Curtain, the 85 Bears.
Oh, sure.
You know, those
Yeah,
sort
if
of
you
want
to go that far back, too.
Yeah, I'm taking us back in the Wayback Machine on this one. But, yeah, they definitely kind of have that mindset. The thing that really impresses me about this defense is it's not smoke and mirrors. It's not a team that has maybe lesser personnel and out-schemes people or anything like that. They say, we're playing single high safety. Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's strap it up. Let's go. And nobody can beat them just doing what they do, just playing their simple game. And to me, that's really comforting, because at that point, you know that no matter what an offense throws at you, they got to beat you doing your thing. Like that, they're trying to beat you doing your thing rather than you trying to shut them down. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So you hang your hat on that. I really believe that is something that travels anywhere or even at home where the defensive linemen have that huge advantage from the crowd noise, I just don't know that that's something that a Saints offense can overcome. I really just don't see it.
I think one of the keys for me is they're going to have to continue to be as good against the run as they've been. Because if they allow the Saints to start, you know, getting those short little passes where they drop it out to one of their running backs and let them kind of scamper down the field, or even if, you know, those runs up the middle. But Tony McDaniel's been so good. Brandon Mebane's been so good about getting into the backfield and disrupting those types of plays.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, yeah, if somehow the Saints find a way to get their run game going, that would be the concern that I would have.
You know, the one concern that I have regarding our defense in this game is the fact that in the last matchup, Jimmy Graham had 3 receptions for 42 yards. We held him in check.
Oh, yeah.
Well, guess who did the most damage on that as far as coverage goes?
K.J. Wright.
That was K.J. Wright. Who's the only Seahawk to not practice this week?
Yeah, K.J. Wright.
What happens there?
You know, the way I look at it, too, I don't know if it matters necessarily if K.J. Wright's in the game or not. You know, Carroll looked at that and he said, you know, that's 5 or 6 plays that the Seahawks are going to have to, somebody else on the team is going to have to make. But at the same time, those were some pretty incredible plays, too. I don't know, even if K.J. Wright is back in the game, those are just situations where you have a guy that makes some incredible plays, and no matter who it is, somebody's going to have to do it. And could you know, KJ duplicate it again? I don't know.
Yeah.
Jimmy Graham's a pretty good player. He can catch the ball.
He'd do all right.
He's all right. So I think about that, and I think, you know, maybe this time around, if some of those plays go their way, mm-hmm. it's going to be a different game. I mean, you look at that Cardinals game where you know, they throw up the touchdown to Malcolm Floyd,
mm-hmm.
and Byron Maxwell is there,
makes a great play on the ball.
You know, the guy knocks it away, but Floyd still comes down with it. So mm-hmm. You can have guys in position to make great plays, still make great plays, and things can happen that go the other team's way.
Oh, absolutely. And that's when I kind of mentioned like the Lady Luck thing when I was talking about the idea of what could happen to have the Seahawks lose this game. And yeah, I mean, that's just those things you just never know. I mean, it's an oblong ball. It takes funny bounces and, you know, just things happen. But when you look at it on paper and you just stack up talent to talent, you just stack up the idea of being at home in CenturyLink, I think this is about the most favorable matchup that we could have gotten out of all the possible teams, even more so than Green Bay, to me.
I think so, just because, you know, with Green Bay, it seems like Aaron Rodgers, he can, to me, I worry about him going on the road and having success more than a guy like Drew Brees, who we haven't seen that kind of road success from.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously they did have some success against the Eagles. Like I said, it wasn't
prolific.
No, and but they did what they had to do, and mm-hmm. they had the ball. They you know, kicked the game winning field goal. They had, you know, the ball last, mm-hmm. which is really important in those tight games, mm-hmm. those types of tight games. Right.
Pack of pickle peppers.
Try and say that over and over, but yeah, to me, that when I sat down and thought about it, especially going into the weekend, thinking about who I might want to root for. It came down that the Saints are just that team that the Seahawks match up really well against. They don't have that. I mean, they do have guys like Cameron Jordan, Junior Gallette that are really good at getting after the quarterback, but they don't really have that dominant front seven like you see with teams like Arizona and the Rams and
Carolina
and San 49ers. Francisco. You know, those are the types of teams that the Seahawks are going to have a little bit of trouble against because of their offensive line. And so I think it
plays into their hands well.
It does.
Because the Saints really do need to bring a blitzer here and there to really ratchet up the pressure enough to rattle Russell Wilson, or to try to.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, it just leaves other guys open. For example, say a Percy Harvin streaking down the field.
Yeah. Yeah, and we don't know, but it
he's
kinda,
playing. He's playing.
I get the sense that he's playing.
Oh, I get the sense.
Yeah.
That's a fact. Lock it up. Stone cold lead pipe lock. This is happening. Percy Harvin will play this
game. Stone cold lock of the week of the century.
I promise you that. I would bet my firstborn on that.
Yeah.
First and only born on that.
Well, it seems like when Percy has it in his mind to play, just like the Vikings game, he's going to find a way to get out there and get on the field. You know, if there's an issue, he's probably going to be pushing through it because, well, I mean, the fact is that now that it's time for the playoffs, they need a playmaker out there. Well, they don't need one. It's really important that they have that playmaker out on the field. I think they could win without Percy.
They did last time. It's significantly harder.
Yeah.
I really think that is the difference maker on offense for us right now, is that one guy that stretches the field, the one guy that strikes fear into the heart of defensive coordinators, the one guy that draws double teams, the one guy that you have to spend hours game planning for. We don't have that guy on offense as far as our receiving core goes.
Well, and you saw it in the last game against the Saints, is that, you know, their guys were playing up. They were going to take away everything short. And, you know, if you could beat him down the field, that's what they were going to make Russell Wilson do. And that's what he did. So this time, when you have a guy like Percy Harvin, you know, can they do that same type of thing where they, you know, they bring all the guys up, and maybe they do. Maybe that's what they play for, and just hope that
they don't hit.
Right.
Yeah.
Because essentially that's what happened in the Cardinals game. Russell Wilson was a little off on his throws, more so than in the Saints game, but they just didn't hit those downfield plays.
The Cardinals are significantly better at bringing pressure with just their front four.
Well, and they have significantly better secondary, too.
Exactly. And that's the other thing that we haven't really talked about, is the defensive backfield of the New Orleans Saints.
Well, one of the things that I notice is that that dude Vaccaro is out.
Oh, yeah.
And he's a rookie.
That dude Vaccaro is out.
And we talk about it. That
broken
was
something.
Yeah, and a rookie, and having the kind of impact that he did in that game. Yeah. I mean, you saw him flying all over the field. I think he had double-digit tackles against the Hawks. And he significantly impacted that game where you noticed him. You know,
big
obviously,
time.
They still scored a ton of points. But, you know, he was a big impact on defense, and they're not going to have him.
They're not going to have him. So it's just one link weaker. There we go. And, I think this is a tough matchup for New Orleans, especially coming up to the Pacific Northwest. I know they won when it was cold down there in Philly, but it's just different. It's a different kind of cold at the clink. I mean, we're Montana boys you know, here in Missoula, Montana. I went camping out Saturday night in 5-degree weather.
Yeah, how many of you have ever camped in 5-degree weather? Not
I don't
me,
know.
Not this Montana
but
boy.
But I promise you that the hair on my chest grew a half an inch because of it.
Right.
Yeah, it made me a little more of a man. But the idea is, you know, being out there, that wasn't nearly as cold. I promise you, that wasn't nearly as cold as when we went to the Rams game last year in Week 17, where – you know, Jared and I were relatively bundled up, sitting up in the stands.
Yeah.
But I froze my batuzzi off out there. I mean, I was cold. And it's the humid cold.
Yeah, it's a different kind of cold when it's kind of wet and cold. And so
it penetrates.
Yeah, a 40, 45-degree cold with that kind of humidity, that kind of rain, it feels...
Yeah, it was in the 30s the day that we were there.
Yeah.
Which is downright balmy here. Like, when it's 30s here, you're like,
toss
on the shorts.
Yeah,
let's go.
I don't have to wear a jacket today.
So, yeah, that humid, balmy, or, you know, that humid cold that persists at CenturyLink, having the Saints come up into that just does not bode well for them.
Man, talking about the weather, I feel like we're the nightly news.
Who doesn't like the weather?
Every day this week, I've turned on the news, and the weather has led the news. It's
because everybody's finally cold at some point.
Yeah.
It's like, we had those crazy cold temperatures when we didn't have working plumbing in my house.
How is the weather news? That's what I want to know.
Is the weather not news?
It hasn't. Well, everybody knows, though. You can look out the window. I don't need somebody to lead off a newscast telling me what the weather is outside.
I hate it when they lead off the newscast with the current conditions rather than telling you what is about to happen.
Okay.
Like, you know, you got a cold front over here, a warm front over there. You know, they converge over CenturyLink Field, and boom, you got a playoff game between the Seahawks and the Saints. See, that's what they should do.
That's right.
Yeah. So I was just trying to bring that back to football. That was the best I could do.
And speaking about weather, I need to know if an earthquake is in the forecast for the Seahawks, because every time the Seahawks
play the
Saints, we have an earthquake at CenturyLink Field.
Absolutely. Like I said, I think they're hiding Nikola Tesla underneath the stadium, and he's creating Quakes with his harmonics.
Oh, well, you know, it doesn't help or it doesn't hurt anything when you got Marshawn Lynch making big plays or Michael Bennett getting interceptions for touchdowns.
Yeah. So who would be the unlikely interception maker this week, I wonder?
Ooh, unlikely?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, a guy like Red Bryant, maybe?
Yeah.
You know, it's awesome to me when they drop a guy back like Red Bryant into coverage.
And he actually does okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty exotic. I like that sort of stuff.
Or, you know, Clint McDonald, too. You know, you've seen him get an interception this year.
Mm-hmm.
That would be good to see one of those guys run it back. But, you know, Michael Bennett, he just, when he intercepted that ball, I mean, he ran with a purpose.
Oh, yeah. He's running like people were chasing him. Yeah. He was going to score.
Yeah. And, I mean, he looked like a guy who actually ran with the, you know, runs with the football.
He didn't look
like a defensive lineman running with the football.
No, not at all. Like a guy, almost like as lost as Marshawn looks when he busts one long and there's nobody around him.
Yeah, it's like, what?
He just wants to run into
who
somebody.
Who am I supposed to stiff arm if there's nobody after me?
Exactly. I need to give somebody a baby stiff arm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, oh well.
Well, you know, the one thing I guess that worries me a little bit about the Saints game, and we've mentioned a number of different kind of little things, but, you know, Sean Payton, he's a pretty good coach.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't seem like a coach who wouldn't work his hardest to make sure his team doesn't lose to the same team twice in one season.
Sure.
So I look and looking back at his record, since winning the Super Bowl in 2009, the Saints haven't lost to the same team twice.
Really?
In a season.
Okay. Well, that's nice and everything, but they
have. But this is the first time they've gone against the same team twice on the road, so.
Right.
There is that.
In a playoff atmosphere as well.
Right.
It's going to be tough sledding. It's going to be tough sledding for the Saints. I'm not saying it's impossible for them to win, and it's certainly going to be closer than the first matchup was, but Drew Brees on the road with a tremendous pass rush. We see what the actual equation is to take these great quarterbacks off of their game, whether it's Tom Brady or Drew Brees or Peyton Manning, any of these pocket passer guys. You've seen it year after year. You have a ferocious pass rush up the middle with that front four, and it flusters them.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Brees is even more susceptible to that than, say, Brady or Manning, only because of his height. You watch Brees back there, and he takes a little deeper drop. He sets up a little deeper on everything, and he stands on his tiptoes and kind of, you know, points his chin up into the air.
With Russell Wilson, too.
Well, yeah, you do. And I think, you know, the fact of the matter is when you get pressure right up in front of them and you take that space away.
Oh, yeah.
That makes it really difficult on a guy like a Drew Brees, even though he's very adept at moving in the pocket and finding throwing lanes and all that stuff. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think he's wonderful, and he's a good player. But I think that combination of just having, you know, his height along with that kind of pass rush coming at you up the middle is going to disrupt that New Orleans Saints offense as much as anything.
Yeah, and you saw it. I mean, that's kind of the way it played out last time. I think about this defensive line, and I kind of think about it in terms of the Giants defensive line that was in the Super Bowl up against Tom Brady.
That's kind of what I had in mind.
And it was that type of defensive line that allowed them to do so well in the playoffs, and people saw that and saw that as a, you know, kind of, this is what you needed to have to really do well in the playoffs. And fortunately, when Chris Clemens went down last year, you saw it in the Atlanta game. They didn't have that type of pass rush that really disrupted quarterbacks. And Matt Ryan, you know, he threw it all over the field.
Yeah.
But they have a defensive line this year.
And they have almost two defensive lines worth of guys.
They do.
And that's the whole point, is if just a Chris Clemens goes down this year, we're not done.
Exactly.
There's actual other guys to come in.
We have depth.
We have that depth, so that's pretty exciting. But, you know, it'll be an interesting game. I'm unbelievably excited for it. I think this is exactly what Seattle fans have been waiting for up until, you know, now, obviously, was just to get to this point, just to get into the tournament, have the best-case scenario possible as far as having two home games, having the number one seed, have that bye week, have Percy Harvin come back. Man, if it doesn't come to be that we get on to the NFC Championship game, there's nothing else that could have been done up to this point.
So you talk about that. You mentioned a little bit before your mindset that you want to put
managing expectations.
In. Managing expectations.
Yeah. So if I keep my expectations real low, everything delights me. Like anything that's like even mildly good is like, oh, that's great, and everything's puppies and rainbows and sunshine and unicorns, which is great. So oftentimes what I do is that, you know, I look at things as like, you know, what is the worst case scenario? And the worst case scenario would obviously be a loss to the New Orleans Saints at home. As improbable as that sounds, in the first round of the playoffs. And how would I feel about that? And how would I be able to process that? And what would that mean for this team?
Let me help you get you into that mindset, because I saw something that was pretty interesting.
Okay.
Let's see who was. It was the Seattle Times put out an article today that number one seeds have actually struggled when it comes to whenever they face number six seeds in the playoffs.
Really?
Yeah. So going back to 2005, which was the last time the Seahawks went to the Super Bowl, there were, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Is that 7 or 8? 8 times where the number one seed in the playoffs has faced a number six seed.
8 times in the last 9 years?
8 times in the last 9 years.
Wow.
And out of those 8 times, the number one seed has only won twice.
Excuse me?
Only twice. And one of those teams was the Seahawks when they played number six seeded Washington in the first round, the divisional game. You know, almost out of all these games, 8 games are divisional games where the number one seed faces the six seed. And, well, obviously it couldn't happen in the NFC Championship because if the sixth seed wins, they play the number one seed.
Correct.
So the only other place that can happen is in the Super Bowl.
Oh, right.
And the Seahawks played the Steelers as the sixth seed.
The Steelers were the number one seed. So, yeah, exactly.
And we know how that turned out, so we don't need to talk about that. But the only other win was the 2010 playoff season where the Indianapolis Colts beat Baltimore.
Interesting.
And 20-3, but yeah.
Yeah, but here's the thing. None of those games have any effect on this game. All that history isn't like strapping it up and heading out on the field this week. You know what I mean? It's the New Orleans Saints players against Seattle Seahawks players in CenturyLink Field.
Yeah.
Like them's the facts, they're undisputable.
Well, the interesting thing is that somebody brought it to Coach Carroll's attention, and he saw it as a challenge.
Sure.
Because
they
have an opportunity to add another win total to, you know, another win in that 1 versus 6 win column.
Well, let me ask you a serious question, though. What if they do lose this game? What does that mean for this team going forward?
Well, they have a higher draft pick, so I guess you can.
We all know that it doesn't matter where John Schneider drafts. It don't make no, never mind.
No, that doesn't matter. So, I mean,
what kind of changes would you see? I mean, what? Because that'd be a massive disappointment, would it not?
Well, you know, you take it to the talk about the coaches, because obviously there's a lot of interest in, and whether or not the Seahawks win this game or lose this game, there's going to be a lot of interest in the offensive and defensive coordinators. So you wonder how much impact losing a guy like Daryl Bevel or Dan Quinn is going to have on this team going into next year. Obviously, it was great getting Dan Quinn. The defense improved from last year to this year. So if Bevel goes, you wonder if, are we going to get somebody better than Daryl Bevel into that spot? Are we going to have an even more dominant offense come next year?
Do you get somebody worse, too? And that's the other thing. So let's spin this forward a little bit. You know, I talk about what would happen if they lose. But let's just say, you know, Seahawks even win the Super Bowl. And now we're, you know, getting our offensive coordinators and defensive coordinators, whether that's Daryl Bevel or Dan Quinn, interviewed and maybe even possibly hired as a head coach.
In this dream scenario, let's say the Seahawks won the Super Bowl. I like that.
Yeah, in the most realistic scenario. So basically, look at those two coordinators, whether that's Bevel or Quinn. Which one would you rather lose?
I would choose Bevel because
I'm going to totally disagree with
you. Oh, well, I had a 50-50 shot. And just because I have liked so much what I've seen out of Dan Quinn this year. And honestly, going into the offseason last year, I know we didn't have a podcast, so I don't have anything where I can say that I back this up. But
sure. I'll take you at your word, though.
Take me at my word when I say it did not make me sad that we lost our former defensive coordinator.
Gus Bradley?
Gus Bradley.
Really?
I was a Gus Bradley fan,
mm-hmm.
but when you looked at the way that the defense gave up games last year, you know, with the Chicago game,
sure.
With the
the Detroit game, the Miami game, the Atlanta game, yeah.
Yeah, all those games, and I like you say, you know, I started thinking of it as a trend,
mm-hmm.
and I wondered if it was Coach Bradley's just kind of mindset and how he coaches the defense, how he prepares them to where they're going to say, okay, we're going to let them we're going to play these zone defenses, mm-hmm. where they have the opportunity to get it downfield. We're going to, and we're going to just try our luck that way.
Sure.
I'm not seeing that from the team this year.
Right. I think the big difference isn't coaching when it comes to the defense and their elevation and play to this point. To me, the big difference is personnel, mm-hmm. and especially speaking about the defensive line, as we had earlier in the show here. This defensive line and the amount of pass rush that is generated by this defensive line is 10 times greater than the line last year. I mean, I think we can all agree that's been a huge factor. And when you're winning the battle in the trenches up front, that trickles down everywhere else. I don't think that we're playing any better or worse in the secondary this year than we were last year. In fact, I think our linebacker play is actually pretty close to the same as well. The big difference I see is in the D-line play. And I don't think it's coaching. There's different bodies there. There are different guys that are really made a huge impact. There's so much more depth. And then, you know, I asked you which coach you'd rather lose, and you said Bevel. I would say Quinn based on that right there, because I think the improvement is more about personnel than it is in coaching. And the second thing is our coach is our defensive guy. Like, he is our defensive mastermind in Pete Carroll. He's the guy that's the architect of this hybrid 3-4-4-3 defense that they run.
And I see him more as a secondary guy, I guess, because Dan Quinn is the guy. He was a defensive line guy.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
He, knowing that importance that he places on it, I have to think that he was part of the guy where he said, okay, I want to go out. I'm going to get Michael Bennett. I'm going to get Cliff Averill. I'm going to get these guys.
Well, Dan Quinn doesn't go get guys.
Well, no.
That's what John Schneider does.
That's what exactly.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he says, this is the type of philosophy I have in regard to defensive line play and the importance that I place on it and the impact that it can have on the game. So
you don't think Gus Bradley would have had the same type of success with this personnel?
Well, I don't know if he would have had the same personnel. I don't know if that would have been his philosophy to go out and really focus on that in the offseason.
That's more a Carroll and a Schneider decision than all it is with a defensive coordinator.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know that any defensive coordinator in this league looks at you and says, yeah, Michael Bennett doesn't fit my scheme.
Well.
You know what I'm saying? I just don't think that
depends on how you use them, though, too. I agree that Carroll has a big part of it. I mean, he was there. He was helping resurrect Red Bryant's career, you know, moving.
Definitely.
I don't know if it was Carroll's decision or, you know, part of that decision with Bradley, but I think it was actually Bradley's decision to move Red from the inside to the outside,
sure.
and really, you know, turn Red Bryant into a defensive end. And
yeah.
And
so my problem with losing Bevel, though, is that who's your other offensive guy? Who is the other guy that, you know, has a lot of offensive input? I don't think Pete is all that interested in offense for the most part, other than hand the ball to the beast and let our defense just pound people into oblivion. And who's our other offense? Maybe Tom Cable?
I don't think that Tom Cable is a guy that ends up being an offensive coordinator just by the fact of his experience. I mean, he doesn't have he was an offensive coordinator, I think, in college, but I don't think he has a ton of experience. I don't think he mm-hmm. would be the offensive coordinator. I think they would look toward the outside, and that's why I think that they would get somebody good, because when you look at these last couple seasons, when you have coordinators getting interviews,
mm-hmm.
You look at a team like the Seahawks where you have Carroll looking out for his guys, his coaches,
mm-hmm.
where he says, yes, go ahead and go and do these interviews because I want you to have success in your coaching career.
Right.
So he is setting it up to where, you know, it's kind of like a Kentucky in basketball where, yeah, you might get the one and doneers, but you're getting the best one and doneers. So are you going to get, you know, guys that are going to look to they might have head coaching aspirations, but they want to come to the Seahawks mm-hmm. and say, pass up another opportunity where, you know, they might not have that immediate opportunity after one season to say, I'm ready to go and take a head coaching job mm-hmm. Because that's my aspiration.
Sure.
And Coach Carroll seems okay with that.
Not only is he okay with it, but that's something that he encourages.
Right.
And I like that philosophy in the fact that it does exactly what you just said. It attracts guys in that maybe you wouldn't ordinarily get, because they know that if another opportunity comes their way, something that is along the lines of their personal dream, they're not going to be held back. In fact, they're only going to be helped to try to achieve it. And I think that's a great thing on that end of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, and it's a great strategy because, like you said, it brings in the best of the best. But are we seeing right now where this part of this strategy has its weaknesses? Because everything has its strengths and weaknesses, right? Whereas now, our offensive coordinator and our defensive coordinator are interviewing for head coaching positions this last week rather than concentrating on working up a game plan. Now, is that where the weakness is in that strategy?
Well, I don't know if it is, because when they were interviewing last week, they didn't even have an opponent to game plan for. So,
then you're self-scouting. There's all sorts of things that you could be doing focused on your team in the now, what you're doing.
Yeah, and I guess I think about that just in regard to my own personal life, is that, you know, when I'm off work, am I still thinking about work? I understand coaching is a lot different, where there's a lot of hours that goes into what they do. But at the same time, there's still got to be downtime. And, these guys, that's if they have that aspiration to move on,
mm-hmm.
They're probably going to be thinking about it anyway. And if you tell them, if you tell them, no, I don't want you interviewing, I want you focused on this game, you know, are they going to be thinking, well, this coach doesn't even have my back. I have time. I can work it out in my schedule. I can, you know, I'm a grown man.
Yeah.
I can,
no, you're not the boss of me.
Exactly. So it's going to be a distraction either way. It's going to be a distraction if he's actually doing the interview, and it's going to be a distraction if you tell him no, he's not doing the interview.
That's true, because my boss told me that I couldn't chase women, drink beer, and just have general tomfoolery on my time off.
Yeah, you wouldn't like the guy so much.
But I would still do it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I'm drinking beer and I'm chasing women. Those are things that I'm doing. I'm watching football. These are the things I'm doing.
Yeah, it's my off time. What are you going to do?
Yeah, what are you going to do? Yeah.
So
take my birthday away? I don't think so.
No.
Yeah.
So, I know that a lot of people get upset because they feel like their coaches should be 100%
sure.
focused. And, you know, I applaud one of the Broncos coaches where they've been looking at
Adam Gase.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He said he wasn't going to do it. And I think that's awesome.
But that's his choice, though.
That's his choice.
And good for him.
So
I think there's an easy solution to this problem as far as the NFL as a whole, though, goes. I don't understand why there isn't a moratorium on hiring a head coach until after the Super Bowl, or even interviewing for head coaching positions until after the Super Bowl is finished.
Well,
let's just take the distraction out of it.
It is kind of a double standard, because obviously players who are going to be free agents after the season, they aren't going to be out there interviewing with other teams.
Oh, that's a good point. I didn't think much about that.
Well, yeah, but they can't. So
yeah, I know. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about it in those terms.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point.
So I think it would be an interesting thing to say. Yeah. And really, what's the difference in a couple weeks?
None.
Really going to make, other than the fact that head coaching obviously is going to be a little bit different than players, because those couple weeks could be spent, in meetings and talking about the philosophy for the coming season. I'm sure there's teams that are excited and interested to get started on that process. But, mm-hmm. What difference does it make?
Well, that's my whole point, is it wouldn't make a huge difference in the end. Because let's say, just in the land of theory, that the Washington Redskins hired Darrell Bevell, right?
Right.
Darrell Bevell's not quitting as offensive coordinator this week and going to start up and, you know, start his regime in D.C.
Right.
He's going to finish out the season. So why do they not just say you can't interview these coaches until after the season? Because even if you do decide you're going to hire them, you're not going to hire them until after the season ends anyways, to not eliminate, you know, to not bring up distractions, all that. Just let the guys do their jobs throughout the course of their contract for that year, and then just do the interviews and everything. It makes no difference at the end of the day.
Yeah, I would not be opposed to some league-wide policy saying
that. Make me commissioner.
That's what Adams, one of his first moves in office.
Absolutely.
All right.
Yeah. So, yeah, that and I would take away the defenseless receiver rule just because I that's how I feel about that.
Yeah, I would not be upset at you for doing that.
It's good. You can't just welcome guys to catch the ball. You got to be able to knock their head off, you know?
Yeah. Well,
it's football.
You don't need the helmet-to-helmet hits, but at the same time, you see guys it's too hard for the officials to when a guy's head gets whipped back, mm-hmm. whether he gets hit in the shoulder or whether he yeah. You can hit a guy in the shoulder, and it looks like a violent hit. You know, Cam Chancellor, he's the best example of that.
Big
time. Every time he hits a guy, it looks violent.
Yeah.
So you can't throw a flag every time.
No, you can't.
You have to have a good enough eye to know when it's proper technique is being used, and it just happens to be violent.
It happens to be violent. Well, so was there anything else you had on the Saints game? That was kind of everything that has been kind of percolating in my mind here over the last week or so.
I think so. Did I cover that play that we need to run?
No. Oh, yes. Well, I want to know what you've emailed into Daryl Bevel so that we have the maximum possible game plan here.
Well, I think this is really important because when I think of a play.
Did you draw this up on the whiteboard?
Well, I didn't have to draw it up because they ran it with perfection last game.
Oh, it's on tape.
It's on tape.
Oh, okay.
And the Seahawks.
I mean, they won't. But how do you know they won't see it coming?
I think it's just that surprise factor of they don't know when it's going to come.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the fact that it will be there at some point. And the Seahawks, they have to run that pass play where Russell Wilson throws it.
I like those pass plays where Russell Wilson throws it.
They're the best ones.
They're better than when Golden Tate throws it.
Yes. And
sorry. But okay. So there's a play.
There is a
Russell play. Wilson throws the ball.
That's where it starts.
Okay.
I don't know if there's a pocket or not a pocket. That may not matter. He might roll to the
is
outside.
There a hot pocket.
I had to bring that up because you mentioned the importance of the pocket last
week. I
want to
try this pocket thing.
Yeah. So maybe and I didn't pay that much attention to the pocket last time because what I was really watching was when after Russell Wilson throws it, the ball deflects off the helmet of Kellen Davis and into the hands of Derek Coleman for a touchdown.
Right.
So, run that play again.
So you want to see the play where Russell Wilson throws it at the helmet of our third string tight end and have it carom into the hands of our second string fullback for a touchdown.
It happened once and they ran it with perfection.
I would really like to know what that play call sounds like in the huddle. You know, halfback slant, tight end off the dome to fullback, lucky catch, action, ready break. I don't even know.
I don't care what the play call is. They have to run it.
They have to run it. You're right. No, that's good. I hope they take that into account when they're game planning for this week.
Yeah. So one of the other things I want to talk about before we take a break and get to the Craig Terrell interview was just the looking back now on that one loss to the Cardinals at home.
Are you still back there?
I'm still back there because I watched the Bengals go 8-0 at home this season,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and then just get absolutely destroyed by the Chargers at home when it mattered most.
Okay.
So I wonder if that was their Arizona Cardinals moment where they said, we're 8-0 at home. Essentially, all we have to do is show up and against an inferior team. You know, because they're a number six seed. You know, what?
Hadn't the Chargers beaten the Bengals earlier this year?
I don't know. I don't pay
attention. Or was it the other way around? I know they had played.
I think it was the other way around. Okay. Oh, wait. No, because I think the Bengals went on the road to San Diego. So I think you're right. I think the Chargers may have won that game.
I think they did.
But still, just that whole mentality of being indestructible at home.
Sure. Okay.
And I wonder if that will benefit the Seahawks going into this game. Having the mystique broken, and also because having such a dominant performance against the Saints last time, thinking that they can go out and duplicate it.
You need to play with a little fear of failure, I think.
I think so.
And I think that's what that Cardinals loss helps to bring home, is the fact that, hey, yeah, you guys, you can fail here. You're not indestructible, you know. It's like the first time when you turn about like 27, and the first time like you fall over and you like actually hurt yourself, and you kind of see your own mortality, for the first time. You're no longer the 23-year-old that, you know, no matter what happens, like, you're right as rain the next day when you wake up. You know, you hit 30 and you wake up and you realize you need, you know, one day per decade to recover from strenuous physical activity. So, yeah, when you're 30, it takes you 3 days.
Well, that didn't happen in my late 20s. It happened to be in high school. So,
oh, that's when you found your mortality?
Yeah, I graduated high school on a broken ankle. So, you know,
oh, I suppose
I had crutches. Yeah. And that was kind of, you know, an interesting experience going to prom and wearing shorts because
that's true.
Can't wear pants with a cast.
No, you can't. You can't wear pants with a cast. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's just that idea of like you feel it for the first time that, oh, yeah, OK, you're like things can go wrong for me. They can go horribly wrong. And I think that's kind of how the team felt after that Cardinals game, because that game did go horribly wrong. There was just all sorts of bad calls / missed opportunities / just random fluky plays. And that's what it takes to lose at home, yes. But I think it was good that it happened beforehand so they can be a little more focused, so they don't feel so secure. It can only help.
I think so, too. And for the defense to play the game that they had, and to be motivated that if they could have played better, you know,
yeah.
You almost saw Malcolm Smith get into the end zone. If he gets into the end zone on
different
one play, it's a totally different game. So even the defense, you can say, can do better in that regard. So.
Absolutely.
Well, I think we've about exhausted this game, and I'm really excited.
Game's exhausted. Yeah.
And we want to get the listeners to this Craig Terrell interview.
Yeah, this was great. Yeah.
This
was
great.
Stay tuned for that, because if you don't, you'll risk being slightly lamer.
Yeah. And one thing before we go, also want to remind everybody about, you know, we are the official Seahawks, Seahawkers podcast.
This is true.
And of the Seahawks Booster Club. And if you want to check out that club, go to Seahawkers.org, and you can sign up there. There's Seahawkers clubs all over the place, and the 12th man is only getting stronger.
That is true. I found this out today when I was doing some shopping that, you know, or earlier, this was a couple weeks ago, and they basically the guys just told me, yeah, anything Seahawks, good luck finding it. It's everything's sold out.
Yeah.
Because you know, it's all good stuff. And like everybody's after it. You know, the 12s are growing.
That's right. I mean, it's, and I was on Reddit and talking to seeing people who have signed up for the Blue Pride season ticket waiting list.
Yeah.
There's actually a waiting list now for the season ticket waiting list.
Okay.
So, it's and it's like,
wow.
I think somebody was up in the 9,000s. As far as how deep the waiting list for the waiting list was.
Holy smokes.
So it's people are figuring out this is a good Seahawks team.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so if you can't get to the game, at least watch it with some Seahawks buddies. Mm-hmm. And
find a Seahawkers
chapter near you. I heard our buddy Dave in Boston. He put it up there. He was looking for fellow 12s in the Boston area. So that might be a good place for a chapter. I know there's, you know, people in D.C. that get together and watch the games. And so, you know, if you're in a big metro area, there's going to be a lot of Seahawks fans.
Oh, big.
And or even in a, you know, place where enemy territory.
Yes.
There's always plenty of Seahawks fans around there to band together with. Mm-hmm. So check out Seahawkers.org and find out where those chapters are. And if you don't have one and you want to start one, all the information's there. And check it out. Oh, I was going to mention on our Facebook page, Friday night Seahawkers parties. I think there's a list there coming up. So
there is.
Check our Facebook page. If you're in any Washington area, there's probably a Washington area town. There's probably a bar that's having a Seahawkers party before this playoff game.
Big time.
All right. So Craig Terrell coming up. Check it out. Welcome back, 12s. This is Brandon Schultz and Adam Emmert with the Seahawkers podcast, the official podcast of the official Booster Club of the Seattle Seahawks. That's the 12th man scream by our next guest, former Seattle Seahawks defensive tackle Craig Terrell. Craig was a sixth-round draft pick in 2004 out of Purdue and played for the Seahawks from 2004 to 2011. He's the Singing Seahawk, and he's going to be performing Wednesday night, January 8th, for the Seahawks Kick Hunger event at Sport Restaurant. How are you doing, Craig?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for coming on the show. I wanted to ask you about, you know, because you were, you know, how many years ago was it? Back in 2005, you guys were kind of in the same situation the Seahawks find themselves in now. The number one seed and getting to watch the first week of playoff games on TV. What are players going through during this week leading up to the first playoff game? Did it feel different than playing for or preparing for a regular season game?
Yeah, you know, seeing the team do that here over the past week, it was kind of like a trip down memory lane for me, because I kind of look back to us, you know, achieving that the number one seed. You get that first round bye, and, you know, everyone talks about how valuable the bye week is during the season, because it gives you that one break to heal up, and to get one before the playoffs, you don't realize how big that is, because everybody's banked up going into the playoffs. It's just the nature of the NFL at that point of the season. You know, offensive linemen, defensive linemen, they all have something ailing them a little bit. So to have that week off and just have get treatment, or, you know, take it a little easier for practice or rest guys, it's a big advantage. And then you also get the extra focus. So, you know, you get to sit back and wake up on the weekend and watch the wild card division games, and then just have a whole week to plan for your opponent that they didn't have to plan for you.
So that when you're watching those games, do you have any kind of rooting interest? Are you rooting against a rival, or are you just kind of waiting and watching to see who exactly you're going to face? Because obviously you're going to face a good team no matter what.
Yeah, you know, it is. You nailed it right there. At this point, everyone is playing good football. That's how they got to this spot in the season and earned the chance to play extra football in the playoffs. So you kind of look at the teams. I think when it's a division rival, say like this year with San Francisco, you know, they know the Seahawks really well, and the Seahawks know the 49ers really well. So they might not want to meet up against each other necessarily, so maybe you're rooting for them to get knocked out early. But I think you just kind of sit back and take it. And, you know, you almost watch it from a fan standpoint when it's that week off, just because you can't do that all year long. You're kind of locked into game mode and game film mode. So to sit back and just watch football for that weekend is kind of a unique thing for people in that first-round bye situation.
So, Craig, I just had a quick question for you about watching the game, like you just described there, as a fan, as opposed to watching it as you do for game film. What are the big differences in that? Because we hear people talk about that a lot. Us as fans, we've never really watched it in a game film type of mode. What is the difference there for you, other than just maybe camera angles?
Yeah, well, I know personally, I would always just watch, like, it, you know, throughout my career, I usually lined up over the guard or the center. So really, I watched nobody else on the field besides those two. I mean, unless I needed to get a pre-snap read off one of the other linemen or the tight end or something. But I was so focused on, you know, how do they get in their stance? You know, how is their weight distributed? Who are they looking at before the ball gets snapped? You know, who are they talking to help each other on the audibles and stuff? And what happened after that with the receivers and stuff, I really rarely even watched, you know, because that wasn't going to be something I focused on during the game. I was just going to go where the football was after that point. But All my focus in game film preparation was simply on the guy that I was going to go against and his tendencies during the game.
So I'm a little curious about that, Craig. Who was there any offensive lineman that you just hated lining up across from?
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, in practice for my first couple of years with the Seahawks, I'd go against Steve Hutchinson and Walter Jones on a daily basis. So, you know, that kind of sets the bar pretty high, where game days kind of seem easier after going against those guys all week.
Right.
But, you know, opposing teams, you know, I played against Larry Allen for a few years, you know, towards the end of his career. So he wasn't necessarily in his prime, but he was still Larry Allen and you know, one of the strongest, you know, people I'd ever played against. So he was a challenge just from a size standpoint.
So what do you see when you look at the Seahawks defensive line this season?
Oh, man, you know, just guys that get after the football. I think, you know, I thought they were a good pass rushing team last year with, you know, with what Chris Clemens has done over the past, you know, three or four seasons. And then this year they added guys like Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett, you know, that can rush from the inside and the outside. And that's just been a huge advantage to the Seahawks this year because they can go into so many different packages, whether it's three down linemen or four down linemen, and they can bring pressure with just those three or four guys. They don't have to bring linebackers and really expose themselves on a blitz because they have four guys up front that are all legitimate, you know, first pass rushers that could start anywhere in the league, and they're just part of the Seattle nickel package. So that's those guys are hungry to make plays and hungry to get after the ball.
So, Craig, talk to us a little bit about the one guy that kind of stands out to me on the Seahawks defensive line, and that's Brandon Mebane and the way that he plays. What kind of sticks out to you about his game?
Yeah, I think Mebane was probably one of the biggest, if you had to pick a Pro Bowl snub on the Seahawks team, I'd have to say it's him because, you know, he doesn't have a lot of sack numbers, so that kind of hurts you as a D lineman with making the Pro Bowl. But I think if you talk to opposing offensive linemen, you know, centers and guards, on who is the hardest guy to move off the football, it's Brandon Mebane. You know, he plays with such a low center of gravity and in the backfield every single play. He's knocking the offensive lineman backwards. And, you know, that's an invaluable thing to have on your defense because he alters the play for the offensive lineman and for the running back. If a running back sees one of his offensive linemen get knocked in the backfield, he immediately has to change the direction of where the ball's being run. And so many of the plays I think that you see guys make in the backfield, whether it's Chris Clemens or Cliff Averill or the linebacker shooting a gap, it's because Brandon Mebane knocked his guy so far back that the running back had to make a cut back into a tackle.
So one of the things I'm kind of wondering with this game coming up, the Seahawks are playing the Saints again, and obviously the defense had the offense's number the first time up. But, you know, a coach like Sean Payton, he knows where he's going to – you know he's going to have a much better plan when he comes. He's going to look for a place in the Seahawks defense to attack. Where are those weaknesses in the Seahawks defense that they would have the opportunity to attack from your perspective?
Boy, you know, I think offensive coordinators have been looking for that all year long. That's a tricky thing because, you know, you like when we talked about the D-line, and they're just a dominant group that can really shut down your running game. And then the secondary is you know, as the fans and the players and the coaches have already proven with the voting of the Pro Bowl, is the best secondary in the NFL by far. So I think you have to look at the linebacker group just because of the age. You know, they're a younger group, and you're missing K.J. Wright, who's just been an exceptional playmaker all season long. So I would think that they would try to expose a little bit of what they're trying to do at linebacker, whether it's with, you know, matching up tight ends or running backs and routes. That's, you know, Drew Brees loves to throw to, you know, his running backs and his tight ends to, you know, get the ball out with Jimmy Graham's obviously an exceptional athlete, but you know, I don't know. Those guys rise to the occasion for even being young players. They still play really good football, and especially at home. So I think it's going to be a challenge for the Saints to get anything going offensively.
So let's talk about the Saints defense a little bit. Now they've gotten after the quarterback this year, but in their previous matchup, Russell Wilson threw for 300 yards on him. How are they going to change, you know, especially with the pieces that they're missing to prevent, you know, all those deep passes that they got beat on this time? Are they going to make adjustments there, you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's the tricky thing covering the Seahawks offense. It's the kind of the double-edged sword of, you know, are you going to come up and put eight guys in the box and try to stop Marshawn? Because, you know, if the Saints did that, you know, Russell Wilson throws for 300 yards on him. So do you back a guy out and let Marshawn take over the game with just seven guys in the box? And because they can go either direction, you know, and then you have the option of Russell Wilson running the football. So that brings another fold into it that defensive coordinators have to think about. So, you know, they're a physical defense. I think they have to come into the game thinking that Marshawn's the number one threat to them, simply because of how powerful a running back he is and how committed Seattle can be to their running game, especially once it gets going. So, you know, you tempt fate and wonder if Russell can hit you again like that. But, you know, the receivers have to have a big game. They have to be open. They have to give them those outlets to throw the for Russell to get rid of the ball when the pass rush comes.
Yeah, and you look at the potential for Percy Harvin coming back too. I mean, what's that going to do to their defense?
Yeah, I think that's the big question. You know, and the fans are wondering it. You know, I know I'm wondering just to see how he progresses through practice, and I'm sure the Saints are worried about that too. That's another thing. You know, as if the Seahawks didn't beat him bad enough the first time, add Percy Harvin into that mix, and whether he's returning the ball in kickoffs and in that situation, you know, to be able to put a playmaker of his caliber on the field and put him anywhere you want, just get the football to him. That's a special thing, and that's, you know, that's the things that keep defensive coordinators awake at night.
So, Craig, what would it be like to have a player on your team all year that maybe only played one game like a Percy Harvin, somebody who's has so many expectations riding on him, to come and join the team and actually start playing this late in the season? How hard is it to integrate somebody like that?
I'm not exactly sure. I mean, I think, he's been a part of the locker room. It's not like he's a guy off the street, and I think that helps. You know, it's one thing if he was a free agent signing this week who they said, okay, this guy's going to be an integral part of the game plan, and we're going to get the football to him because, you know, guys might not know him. Russell Wilson might not feel comfortable with him. But, Percy's been there throughout the off season. He's, you know, been in the locker room all year long. He has relationships with the guys on the team. So I think they understand how valuable he is and, you know, how much of an X factor he can be in a football game. So if you can put him in, you know, people want him on the field. His teammates want him on the field to do what he does best.
So one of the things I was looking at, Craig, when I was looking at your stat line for your seven seasons with the Seahawks, it was really fascinating to me that you went to the playoffs in all but two of your seven seasons. What was it like going straight to the offseason in 2008-2009?
Oh, it's awful. I mean, you get spoiled. And I think I definitely came into at a great time to be a Seahawk. We went to the Super Bowl in my second year, and it became an expectation, and right, you know, that was the goal that we set for ourselves. It's just being a contender every year. So to end the season or know your season's ending, you know, weeks away, and to have that end date, it's not a fun time because guys start worrying about their jobs and coaches start worrying about their jobs. And you like it when the season ends on a high, on a play. You know, if you lose in the playoffs, you still made a run at it, and you have something to build off the next year. When you go into the end of the year with a losing record out of the playoffs, you know, you wonder if it's going to turn into a rebuilding system or trying to build momentum throughout the offseason.
Well, one of the really interesting things is you kind of have that perspective. You played for all three of the you played for Holmgren, you played for Mora, and then you played for Carroll your last season. What was it? How were their different approaches to just the way they were as coaches?
Yeah, you know, every coach had their own style. You know, I think Mike Holmgren was very similar to my college coach, so that was an easy transition. They both had, a similar demeanor about them, an approach to the game, an approach to letting their assistant coaches, you know, kind of do what they do best and coach up their players. So that was a good transition for me. Jim Mora, was a very energetic. He was actually on staff before he became the head coach, so I knew what to expect from him. So that was easy. And then Pete Carroll had a very unique style as well, which was very up tempo, very upbeat, and I love that style as well. So luckily, you know, I enjoyed all the different coaching styles that I was exposed to. But I think the focus that you have to have is on yourself as a player, because you have to be you. And you have to, because that's when you're going to play your best football, is when you're giving your best effort from what you're comfortable with. And then if you're doing things right, then the coach is going to like you.
Well, the last thing I wanted to ask you about, you brought up Super Bowl in 2005. Has that stuck with you at all? I mean, obviously we all know there were some interesting calls in that game. What really sticks with you through these years? Is it kind of forgot about it by now?
I think looking back at that game, obviously there was things that we could have done better as a team where those issues wouldn't have been such a big deal. And I think that's where you always have to start, is how could we have changed change the outcome and not put it in somebody else's hands. And but there's an element of it where, you know, that referee came to one of our mini camps, you know, in the following years and gave us an apology in a team meeting for his mistakes that cost us a Super Bowl. So there is that element of, well, this guy's admitting that he was the reason that we lost the game. So
now, did that make you feel better at all, or did?
No, I don't think it made me feel better. I'd rather it be on me and rather say, you know, we could have done better as a team and played better football and not had a guy take it.
Well, before you go, tell us a little bit about the Craig Terrell Band. I seem to remember you getting into that even just kind of in the off season, and you've carried it forward after your NFL career. How's that been working for you?
Yeah, it's been great, man. Yeah, I did started my band in 2008, so it's kind of in the middle of my career, and with all local Seattle musicians who've just been playing here in Seattle for, you know, a lot of years and love music and you know, I just do it for fun and just do it as a hobby. And we've done two albums together of original music. And, you know, I just have a blast. You know, well, luckily we get to do things for charity events like we're doing on Wednesday for Food Lifeline and the Seahawks Kick Hunger Challenge. But, you know, all my stuff's available at ctband.com, like Craig Terrell Band. So if you want to check it out, it's all right there. It's on iTunes as well.
Oh, and people should check it out, too. I actually got on the website earlier today, and you guys have a really awesome T-shirt for the Kick Hunter situation. I'm definitely buying one of those. That's pretty rad.
Yeah, you got to get the T-shirt. You know, the guys who design a lot of the Pearl Jam artwork made that T-shirt for us just for this event. It's Ames Bros is the name of their company. And, you know, I asked them, I told them what we were doing with the Kick Hunger Challenge for Food Lifeline, and they're like, oh, we got to make you a T-shirt, and they put it up for sale, and all the money goes to Food Lifeline right here in Western Washington. So, and that's available at ctband.com too.
Oh, nice. Yeah, and I think tickets for the show, you can get them there as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
Greg, I want to thank you for coming on. I also want to let folks know they can follow you on Twitter at Terrell Music, T-E-R-R-I-L-L Music, and check out the Craig Terrell Band at ctband.com, and also check out that Seahawks Kick Hunger event. Thanks for coming on, Greg.
It's my pleasure, guys. Thank you, and enjoy the game this weekend, and enjoy the run through the playoffs.
Welcome back, 12s. Brandon Schultz and Adam Emmert here with you. Thanks to Craig Terrell for coming on the show. You know, that's three defensive Seahawks that we've had on now. Mm-hmm. Seahawks from the defensive side of the ball.
Are you saying all our guests were, like, defensive when they were on? Because I thought they were kind of open. I thought they were fine.
They played on defense when they played for the Seahawks.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay,
I could have said that much more better.
More better eloquently.
I was going to use eloquently, but that's such a big word.
Yeah, it is. That's a lot of syllables for this late.
Better is essentially what I meant.
It's more syllables than I have brain cells. So
what I'm trying to get at is, you know, we really should shoot for someone on the offensive side of the ball or even special teams. I'd be into that.
Yeah,
so we'll have to be on the lookout.
Let's see what we got brewing for next week.
Yeah, and I really have to thank Mike Flood, the Vice President of Community Relations for the Seahawks, for helping set up that interview with Craig. Tracy Williams, our President of the Military Seahawks, has helped set that
up. You mean
as
our
well.
Booking staff? Holy cow, these guys are amazing.
I know, isn't that great that we can just shout out to a couple folks and they'll, we can get you an NFL player, former Seahawks, player to...
Big deal.
Yeah, they only play for the Super Bowl team.
They got nothing else going on.
Yeah, we can make that happen.
Talk to two dudes in Montana.
Yeah. And the crazy thing was they turned it around in like an hour. So
right.
It, much faster than I ever
than
could.
Than I do anything. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
including this podcast.
Thanks to Mike and Tracer for making that happen. And I think you wanted to talk a little about our iTunes reviews because...
Right.
Our folks out there, they've been doing really well at it.
They had done really well up until about the last 2 weeks when I stopped, you know, begging, cajoling, berating.
Let me remind folks that it's even out there.
Right. So, you know, that iTunes thing, it's still there. You know, it hasn't gone away.
It hasn't gone away.
It sure hasn't. And, you know, if you add another star rating on there, that'd be great because then the number goes up and then I feel cooler. And let's face it, this podcast isn't about the Seahawks. It's about my ego. So if you could take and get that done for me, that'd be fantastic.
That's really when I went to Adam and I said, you know, there's a lot of military people overseas that I really think would like listening to Seahawks news in a podcast format. And Adam, he said to me,
what's in it for me?
What's in it for me? <That's>... And I said, your ego. And he said, yeah, I'll do it.
Oh, yeah. Me and my ego are totally on the same page.
And he said, we have to get up to at least 50 stars on iTunes for me to continue into a second season.
Because the longer we go without 50 stars, every night I cry myself to sleep into my pillow.
And we don't want that.
No, I'm going to have to buy like waterproof pillowcases. It's getting awkward. And I don't want they crinkle.
Although I can maybe direct you to an uncrinkly waterproof type of mattress
bedding
situation.
Bedding.
Well, you know, having kids, you look for that kind of stuff.
You have the young kid.
Hey, you have older kids, so they may not need the waterproofness so much.
No, not anymore.
But when you do have some criers,
it happens.
You need them.
It happens. But, you know, one of the things, you know, you guys could all do better by you know, throwing a couple
out.
Stars there. But, you know, we should get into our do better a little bit here.
We should. And I will just say that I'll pitch the iTunes thing one more time because there are NFL, there are podcasts for other NFL teams out there. And you guys have put us up there in star ratings on iTunes and reviews ahead of almost all of them, except for I think the Cowboys one.
Right.
And we don't want to lose to the Cowboys with anything.
No, pretend like it's December and you got to put these guys down.
Yeah. Exactly.
Only Tony Romo can't give away the stars that the Cowboys have on
you there. Know those podcasts aren't adding any stars in December.
No.
So, yeah, let's get into it with Do Better.
Yeah.
Adam, kick us off.
Okay, well, originally my Do Better was going to be the Red Rifle, Andy Dalton, because he's a turnover machine, and he just needs to do better at not, you know, turning the ball over. But I sat here, and I remembered my Saturday night when Jared and I get done with sawmill work all day outdoors, 6 miles from the Canadian border in the freezing cold. Come back down. We have dinner with my mom because it's his birthday. Or her birthday. And then we decided that we were going to go do what I mentioned before or previously that we were going to drink some beer and chase women.
Aforementioned before previously. Did you talk about this before?
There might have been some redundancy there. But there was like 3 words going through my head and I couldn't form one of them. Gosh, this is what happens when I get tired and try to do betters. I got to do better.
It is 11:05 Montana time currently.
Yeah.
And, Tuesday night.
So anyways, we go to Scotty's Bar in Kalispell, and we sit down, and we're watching. We sit down right at the very end of the Eagles-Saints game, and clearly I'm rooting for the Saints. Like, I just wanted to see the Saints, you know, come to the clink. I thought that was going to be a great matchup for us.
Well, we saw it once. It worked out well.
Right. So this rowdy woman sits down next to me, and her friend sits down kind of, you know, kitty corner across the bar. We were kind of on a corner. They have on their matching cougar tank tops. They're like, they're pink camouflage, right? You know, so very classy.
Scotty's Bar in Kalispell.
Scotty's Bar in Kalispell. And she sits down and, you know, starts rooting vehemently for the Eagles. And so I looked over. I said, are you an Eagles fan? Like, what's your deal? She's like, no, I'm a Niners fan. And I'm like, oh, really? Why, you know, so why are you rooting for the Eagles? Because I want to go up to Seattle, and I want to beat the pants off those Seahawks. I can't even, I cleaned up the language. I mean, she was not nearly as eloquent when she was talking. Well,
judging by her attire, and like you described, I wouldn't expect her to.
Yeah, teased hair, too much makeup. It was the full money. And so she looks at me, and she goes, so, how come you're rooting for the Saints? I'm like, because I'm a Seahawks fan, and. You know, even if you do come up, we're going to spank you down just like we did the last 2 times at home. So how do you like them apples? And she looks at me and her eyes get wide like crazy town. Like she's staring into my soul.
You have fueled the sports hatred in her fire.
In the crazy woman fire. And she looks over at her friend, like kitty corner from the bar, and she goes, "You tell him to start saying other things." And I looked at her, and I was like, nobody tells me what to say. Like, I don't really enjoy the 49ers, and we're going to beat you because that's what we do when you guys come to the clink. She looks at me, she goes, "You listen here, buddy. I will fight over football. I will fight you over it." And I looked at her, I go, okay, A, football's not worth fighting over.
Oh, that's beyond sports hatred.
That's delving into, and she's like, "I have actually done jail time over stuff like this." And I was like, "I believe it. Just keep your," I said, "I believe it. I thought you would have been a Raiders fan then," which she didn't find all that amusing. And so at the end of the day, you know, I tried to calm her down, let her know that, you know, I don't fight over football because that's not something worth fighting about. And so crazy.
So she one-upped you. She's obviously a better fan.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So
this is your do better. You obviously need to be a better fan.
I am a better fan.
Be willing to fight for your team.
I prevented a bar fight with a woman, okay? Because A, I don't fight chicks. B, I don't fight, you know, at all if I can help it. And, you know, C, that's just stupid, you know. So, but my do better is for the crazy cougar, pink camo dressing, hair tees, big time makeup, angry fighting 49ers fan at the Scotty's bar. Do better.
if she is listening, or
she's
one of
listening.
Her friends, if you know this woman, you go ahead and pass along Adam's do better.
Yeah,
and
professional psychological help. She needs it.
Yes. And do not try and track him down and fight him.
Right, please.
So my do better also kind of has to do with, fighting, I guess.
Perfect.
I'm trying to figure out a good transition to my do better. No,
I'm
there
sorry,
is none.
That was the most random story on the Seahawkers podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Today, so
I'm glad you told it, though.
Okay, good. I'm glad you are.
So my do better is for Anthony Davis of the 49ers. See, it had a 49ers twist. How did I not go to that transition?
Whiff.
Wow. Anyway, so the reason why this hit my radar is Anthony Davis tweeted, "Nature boy Ric Flair flew into this bleep hole," and this is before the Packers game, flew into this bleep hole to show us some love. And I'm just going to gloss over the fact that you called Wisconsin a dump. So the 49ers got a pro wrestler to come in and motivate mm-hmm. their team. Now, mm-hmm. I understand this probably makes sense considering their head coach.
Right.
But, you know, you got a professional wrestler to come in and
yes.
motivate your team.
Yep.
You know they fix fights in wrestling, right?
Yeah, they
I'm not
do.
Breaking any news with that, right?
No.
To people.
We've covered this before, actually.
I think we have. And so it's not like Ric Flair had like some kind of to overcome adversity to win in WrestleMania.
Right.
In fact, you know, it inspired me to look up Ric Flair's WrestleMania record.
Right.
Because obviously WrestleMania, that's their one time a year big
Correct.
Event for,
yeah.
for wrestling, mm-hmm. For any non-wrestling
Is
fan.
Is it like Peyton Manning in the playoffs?
It's exactly like Peyton Manning in the playoffs. He's 1-4 in his 5 WrestleMania matches.
Whoa.
And this is the guy that you're coming in to motivate your guys to win,
mm-hmm.
to go on to the Super Bowl.
I think where their big mistake was is that they went with Ric Flair rather than Macho Man Randy Savage.
Well,
yeah,
sadly.
Ooh, yeah.
Sadly.
Come on, 49ers.
I hate to break this to you, Adam, but Macho Man has passed. So
oh, he has?
He has
passed. Macho Man is gone?
He is gone.
Oh, R.I.P. Macho Man Randy Savage.
It's sad news.
Oh, ooh,
Undertaker
yeah.
may have been the better option because that dude
Does he
is,
even talk, though?
Maybe not, but he's indestructible when it comes to WrestleMania.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So, and so Ric Flair's one WrestleMania win, it was tag team match where they beat some...
There's your
big fan,
obscure
probably.
WrestleMania, yeah.
There is my obscure mm-hmm. WrestleMania knowledge. So, yeah, they didn't get the Ultimate Warrior. They didn't get Hulk Hogan.
Nope.
You know, they didn't even get the ghost of Andre Giant.
Right.
I hate to break it to you, too, but Andre the Giant is no longer with us.
That is one I did know.
You did know that one. Okay.
And mainly because he was in The Princess Bride.
Yes. Okay.
That's why I know that.
That's why you know.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, that goes to my knowledge of former wrestlers who have passed. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now that we are up to speed on that.
Right.
You know,
Anthony Davis, they have this guy, and he calls Wisconsin a dump.
He calls Wisconsin a dump, and essentially my do-better is for the 49ers.
Mm.
And that Ric Flair, this was the best that you could get to
right.
to pump your guys up before a big game with the Packers on the road.
Yeah.
Come on, 49ers. You can do better.
Do better. I'm with you there. Well, sweet. So now we got to do better. We're going to finish up with the ever popular who's better at life than Skip Bayless.
I don't know if it's ever popular. It is popular between the two of us.
I think I just phrased that wrong. It was more the way that the ever popular.
that's
better at life than Skip Bayless?
That is a better way to put it.
Okay. Yeah, it's all about inflection. So my better at life than Skip Bayless this week is the Oakland Raiders organization. And Mark Davis, the now president of the Oakland Raiders, the son of Al Davis. And I'm still not convinced that Al Davis didn't have a human body, like, you know, cloned or made in a petri dish and then implanted his soul into Mark Davis. I'm not convinced.
You're not convinced?
Not convinced that didn't happen. But
that would
just
be...
Just look at Mark Davis. He doesn't look like a normal human being.
No, but that would be a better at life if he somehow managed to do that. Al Davis would be better at life than Skip Bayless.
That's true. That'd be a technological breakthrough. But that's not why the Oakland Raiders are my better at life than Skip Bayless. They are my better at life than Skip Bayless because they've decided to retain Dennis Allen and their GM, Reggie McKenzie.
Okay.
And the reason why I like this move is, number one, you look at the very successful franchises throughout the NFL, and the one thing they have in common is stability. And you look at, say, like the Cleveland Browns, who they've been through, what, like 9 coaches in the last 11 years or something like that?
And how many GMs?
Yeah, exactly. And they just fired their head coach after one season. It's that constant carousel that really catches up with you. Whereas I believe that Dennis Allen and Reggie McKenzie did a great job. I mean, as this their being their first year together as a tandem of starting to turn over what I truly believe is the worst roster in the NFL. I mean, the amount of talent that's on that roster is ridiculously putrid. And they actually competed. They were in a lot of games.
And the AFC West was not an easy division.
No, 3 teams made the playoffs out of the AFC
right,
West.
Exactly.
So that tells you something right there. And I thought they were relatively competitive, especially when you take into account that they had Terrell Pryor or Matt McGloin as your quarterback. You're not just – it's like the Cardinals of last year. You're just not going to win many games because of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I commend the Oakland Raiders for not having that knee-jerk reaction and firing two guys that I think will do a good job of turning around that franchise. So Oakland Raiders, you're better at life than Skip Bayless.
Well done, Oakland. You are definitely in the right direction. So my better at life than Skip Bayless is Marshawn Lynch.
He's a mean one.
Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah, that's just fun to
do. Just made that up.
Yeah, we did.
We worked on it during the break, though.
Yeah,
took quite a bit of rehearsal.
Yeah.
So the reason why he's better is that so I don't know if you saw the news this last week, but he got a $50,000 fine mm-hmm. for violating the league policy on interviews and that he was not giving them.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. I like how he tried to like get around it by doing his 1 minute and 23 second press conference
right?
at the end of the season. I like
it. Hey, I did it. Look at me.
I talked to the media. That's what you told me I had to do, and I did it.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Just trying to win games, boss.
Hey, he showed up on Real Rob Report, and you know he was doing his stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
does
that
not count.
It should count.
Yeah.
You know, you see Michael Robinson as mm-hmm. a member of the media. Mm-hmm. So you know, even if he turns and walks away whenever he's on camera, he's making an appearance.
That's exactly true.
But The one thing that I liked about it, though, was him passively kind of retweeting his dissent about the fine. Because people would say things, and obviously he was seeing them because he got tagged with his @MoneyLynch handle
sure.
on Twitter. And if somebody had a good
tweet about the fine,
okay. he would go ahead and retweet it, okay. kind of suggesting his endorsement
mm-hmm.
Of how that person felt.
Sure.
And I just like to, yeah, I'll say it here. I said it on Twitter. Skip Bayless gets paid tens of thousands to say absolutely nothing of any importance.
True.
Marshawn Lynch pays tens of thousands and contributes more in life saying nothing.
That's exactly true.
So,
and I do like Marshawn's Twitter activity. You know, I think it's a good choice for you. I like the way that he tweeted about the Pro Bowl selection. He's like, don't know why y'all like me so much. You know, like, I can't do it. That's a terrible Marshawn impersonation. I'll never do that again.
Never do that again.
No, that was like hillbilly Marshawn. He doesn't even sound like that. Good Lord. All right. Well, anyway, I just thought that was really great. And there's a lot of reasons to like Marshawn.
Well, one of the things that I saw that was kind of interesting, there was an article that the Seattle Times posted, and there's actually a burger that you can get now at
the Beast Burger.
The Beast Burger.
That sounds tasty.
I think that's, yeah, it is. It's called the Beast Burger.
It better be.
Yeah.
Well, if they didn't, that's a marketing just whiff.
So, two burger patties, two slabs of bacon, layer of ham. So, not only do you have the bacon, but you have the ham.
So, you got double pork, double beef.
Yes. Double pork, double beef. Then onion rings, side of fries, and then what else is missing?
A Beast Quake shake.
No.
Oh.
Bag of Skittles.
Oh, there it is. Okay.
So.
I thought I was clever for rhyming. Well, I'll tell you what. That will definitely plow a beast mode right through you after you eat it. it's happily named.
It's not cheap either. $15. But for stadium food.
Well, and you have half a cow in there. A full
half
hog
a pig,
on there.
So
yeah. Yeah.
I might be looking for one of those this weekend.
If you can power down even half of one of those. Hats off to you, man.
I tell you
You'll be my better at life than Skip Bayless if you can do it.
Oh, so you know what we have to do? If we're going, if the Seahawks move on,
when the Seahawks move on. God, I got to try to change your,
I know. I don't want to be the guy that jinxes it, though. But
you can't help it.
I obviously, Adam, every game that I've been to in the last 3 years, the Seahawks have won. So obviously I have some kind of importance in the cog of the Seahawks universe, right?
That's all I'm saying.
So I cannot bring myself to jinx it.
Yeah.
Anyway, one of the things we have to do is, and for anybody who's out in Washington, go to McKenna, Washington. It's it's near Fort Lewis, in between kind of Roy and Yelm, kind of northeast of Olympia. For the folks in that area, there is a place where you can get, I think it's like a 5-pound hamburger. And it's amazing. It has like 10 patties and cheese and bacon and ham. And
it's the size of a baby.
It is ginormous. I have a picture of myself with it somewhere because I actually tried to eat one. Me and my buddy went there. He lives in Roy. And
that's weird living inside a person.
Yeah.
He lives inside Roy?
Roy, Washington, dude.
Oh, okay.
It's a big rodeo town. You got to go there.
Okay.
Anyway, it's one stoplight type of town. But I went to the third grade there. Anyway, in McKenna, this burger, got to check it out.
Okay. Sounds
so
good.
So that is definitely on the agenda. And I did want to say, Marshawn Lynch.
He's your better at life.
Better at life than Skip Bayless.
Yeah.
And I did check this out Friday, January 10th, 6 p.m. is when these Seahawkers rallies are going to be happening.
Perfect.
And so if you're in Bremerton, Ephrata, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, Federal Way, Kirkland, Linwood, Mount Vernon, Olympia, Seattle, Shoreline, Spokane Valley, Tacoma, Vancouver, all those towns are going to have Seahawkers rallies.
If you're a real Seahawker, what you do is you're going to rent either a private bus or a private jet, and you're going to bar hop to every single one of those.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Spend 5 minutes at each.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be that guy at the party that's just like,
came
by to say hi.
You're going
to
need an entourage, and you need to convince a seagull to accompany you. And if you could do that, you'd be money at every one of those parties.
I'm telling you, I think I'm going to hit this timeout pizza one in Ephrata.
That sounds pretty sweet.
North of Moses Lake, kind of northwest of Moses Lake, and it starts at 6 p.m. I'm going to be on the road. I think I'm going to be close to that one.
Yeah.
I think that's the one that I have the best chance of getting to.
Well, lucky
you. At 6 o'clock, I plan to be through Spokane Valley, I hope.
Yeah, there
If not, that's the other option.
Okay.
Good Times Bar and Grill.
There it is. Well, it can't be bad times.
No.
Yeah. Well, congratulations to you. You'll be having fun doing that while I'll be having my side of the family's Christmas finally on Saturday, since it's the first time that all of us will actually not be out of town, one of us. Yeah, so I'll
That'll be good, too.
Hey, well.
It's not a Seahawks playoff game, but.
And it's my family. I mean, I love them, but
yeah.
It's just my family.
Yeah, no, you have a good family.
Yeah, they're a lot.
Yeah, so, but you get to watch the Seahawks game.
Yes, I will.
So.
On Dad's big screen, so that'll be cool.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, that makes it all worth it.
It sure does.
You'll be at home with the big screen, and. You know, I think that about does it for this week's show.
The better.
I know. It was.
That's all I got, man.
I just have to say, once again, Craig Terrell.
Yeah, money.
He was money.
Yeah.
I was very appreciative for his time and his insight, and I actually learned a couple things, and he, you know, answered a few questions that I've always been kind of curious about.
Yeah,
so.
That's cool asking mm-hmm. these types of questions. So if you're on, if you were ever on the Seahawks offense or played special teams, you're on our radar.
Yeah, yeah, we're stalking you.
Yeah.
Yeah, come talk on our show.
We'll have to make that happen. So, all right, folks. Well, that does it for another episode of the Seahawkers podcast.
Yeah,
and that leaves us with only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks!